morning and welcome to Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. I'm Bob Russell, your host today, joined in the studio, as always, by my partner in crime, fellow traveler, and co-host, John Jurisic, owner, Harbor Digital Media, past president of the Greater Victoria Chamber of Commerce, and current director of the BC Chamber of Commerce. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Bob. I woke up this morning and it was dark.
Yes.
Well, we are into fall, finally.
Get used to it.
Oh, man.
John, tell our listeners about the Twitter feed.
Bob, our listeners can interact with us through the Twitter feed, which we have labeled hashtag Sunampa, S-U-N-A-M-P-A. Interestingly enough, in the 5 or 6 weeks that we've had it up, mm-hmm. not a soul has connected with us that way.
You know,
now, that's either because all of our 48,000 listeners are sleeping, mm-hmm. or we actually have 4 listeners.
Well, this is not the sort of admission that you normally hear in the media.
Hence, we're different.
Yes,
now,
we are.
Now, notwithstanding all that, mm-hmm. we are looking at examining an online feed. So look for exciting technology developments in the future.
I said, as if I actually understand what you mean by that. But, you know, you and I both, you know, owners, past and present of technology companies, of course, don't really know that much about
Well, that's company. That's a big myth that we don't want our,
exactly.
shall I say, 48,000 listeners to know?
Exactly. So we won't tell them that.
Excellent.
Okay. Good plan. Anyways, on today's show, in the second hour, as often is the case, Lisa Helps, Victoria City Councillor and community activist, will be coming in to talk about this week's meeting of the Union of British Columbia Municipalities. Lisa was certainly there and engaged, I'm sure, in a lot of the discussions. We'll also chat about...
That'll be fun.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Chat about matters political in the last week. There's been a number of things come up. But in the first hour, we're going to continue with our discussion of education, a conversation we started several weeks ago. And today on the line, we've got Rod Allen, Superintendent of Learning, Ministry of Education. We're going to talk about the curriculum review. Rod, thanks for being on the show.
Morning, Bob. Morning, John. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good morning.
Rod, explain to me, what was the genesis, I should say, of the curriculum review? Why is it being done? Why was it felt necessary?
Well, we've looked around the province and had a number of conversations with people from around the province about education in British Columbia and the kinds of things that we need to be thinking about to be taking it forward to the next level. We've mm-hmm. got a great education system in BC. On international assessments, we do incredibly well in British Columbia, but we, like a number of other jurisdictions around the world, Finland, Singapore, a whole variety of places, are really looking at their education system and saying, are we really preparing kids for the world that's to come? We're doing great preparing them for the world that is, perhaps, but what about the world to come? Mm-hmm. And so that started a whole number of conversations. The Premier's Technology Council a couple of years ago put out a great report looking, sort of casting their eyes on the future and talking about education in British Columbia and the kinds of things they thought we needed to be looking at. So we looked at a whole number of those kinds of pieces, and like I say, went around the province for about a year talking with groups of folks, especially teachers, and saying, so what is it that we need to do differently? How can we help you get to this place? Mm-hmm. And a common theme that came up over and over and over again was the curriculum.
Okay, explain to me precisely what we're talking about when we're talking about the curriculum.
Sure. Provincial governments, each jurisdiction, and in British Columbia, it's us, the provincial government sets the curriculum, which are the things that everyone agrees that children should know, mm-hmm. The things that they should learn. And they're divided up into learning outcomes, we call them, which are sort of discrete statements of what kids should know in each subject that they need to be taught. And that's law, so it's required that every student be taught every one of those prescribed learning outcomes that are sitting in the curriculum.
Okay, when you say learning outcomes, presumably as part of that, you know, a learning outcome is rather than, it's not all about knowledge, it's also about skill set, right?
Well, Yes and no.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, you put your finger on it exactly. Most of the learning outcomes that we have in British Columbia currently have tended to be more about knowledge and content.
Okay.
You need to know, when the War of 1812 was, or what those kinds of.
It was in 1812, for just in case you were wondering.
Okay. You apparently did very well in social studies.
I did very well. Very well.
But he doesn't know tech.
No, exactly. Anyway, sorry, Ron.
Great. Maybe you're spelling Twitter wrong.
Yeah. He's the sales and marketing arm, okay? I'm just the eye candy. For radio.
Oh, we've made him speechless, poor guy.
Okay. Sorry, Ron. Okay.
So most of those learning outcomes have been content-based. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that, as well, that we know really clearly from talking to a variety of folks, Premier's Technology Council stated this in their report, when we went out, the Minister Abbott, when he was Minister of Education, went out and talked to a variety of people. He sort of put a panel together of people from around the province, business leaders, post-secondary educators, people from the arts communities, the social services communities, and so on, and got a group of people together over a number of weeks and asked the question, what does an educated citizen look like? What is it that our kids need to be able to do when they leave the K-12 system and move into the world of work or the world of further education or whatever it might be? And interestingly enough, every single person said the same thing. And that lines up with what the international research is telling us as well, which is we need a better balance between content, learning outcomes, the knowledge, but we also need things that we're calling competencies, which are the being able to apply that knowledge. Things like, so competencies like communications, critical thinking, personal responsibility, and so on, that kids need to be able not just to know something, but they need to understand it and be able to apply it. And we've moved, because our curriculum is so broad, and we have so many learning outcomes, just an unbelievable array of them, that teachers talk about, and if you've talked with teachers, you'll hear them talk about coverage. I have to cover the curriculum. I don't have time to slow down and get into depth on this piece or that piece because my instructions are to cover the curriculum. Mm-hmm. And so we need to address that. And so in a long roundabout way to answer your first question, that's why we are where we are today, looking at the curriculum and trying to rethink the balance between knowledge learning outcomes, the knowledge and facts that kids need to know, and the ability to apply them.
Yeah. Well, when you say that, I often remember a friend who many years ago was dean of a fairly consequential law school in the country, and I remember him telling me that they tracked this in terms of students and what they did afterwards or how their law career went afterwards, and he said it was there was no getting around the fact that the best law students who went on to become the best lawyers were English lit majors, and communication component of it, but the critical thinking component of it was key. And he said, it's not even close. It's not even close. Anyways, I know John has some questions for you, but we're just going to have to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll continue talking to Rod Allen, Superintendent of Learning in the Ministry of Education.
From the CFAX 1070 Community Cruiser, here's what's happening.
Join CFAX 1070 at the Super Bowls of Hope, October 30th at the Inn at Laurel Point. Select a handcrafted bowl, enjoy a soup lunch prepared by local master chefs, listen to great music, and bid on live and silent auction items. All proceeds benefit the Youth Empowerment Society. CFAX Santas Anonymous is fundraising for the Good Life Fitness Victoria Marathon happening Sunday, October 7th. Al Farabee is running the half. Go to our site online to donate now. CFAX 1070 is proud to support Cops for Cancer Tour to Rock. The ride is underway now, and good luck to all the riders, including this year's media rider, CTV's Aaron Glazier. For more information on these events and more, visit CFAX1070.com.
Watch for our Mini Cooper Clubman at local events. Sponsored by Mini Victoria and Windsor Plywood. From Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Hi, Jeffrey here from Barclays Fine Custom Jewelers. We recently became the area's exclusive member of the Independent Jewelers Organization. As a member, our local jewelry store has the buying power now of large national chains and allows us direct access to international diamond markets right here from Victoria.
At Barclays Fine Custom Jewelers, we know it's not just jewelry. Whether you want to restore, repair, or purchase a piece of jewelry, you can trust Barclays. Visit them in Oak Bay Village or online at barclaysjewelers.com.
It's a place of healing calm, an escape from the stress and pressures of the world around you. It's where you pamper yourself, soak in candlelit waters, and catch up on the latest words from your favorite author. Some people refer to it as the home spa. Others, the John. No matter what you call your bathroom, it rejuvenates you. So why not return the favor?
At 3-Day Bathroom Renos, we make renovation easy. Book before October 15th and get a free acrylic tub. 3DayReno.com. It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
Guess what? It's sale time at the vitamin shop.
This is one great sale.
I can't wait to check out the back to school and fall sale at the vitamin shop. I can stock up on vitamins and supplements.
Find the most comprehensive selection of high quality nutritional supplements from Natural Factors, Quest, Sisu, Genuine Health, and others during the back to school and fall sale at the vitamin shop. 1212 Broad Street between Yates and the Bay Center. They deliver. Call 386-1212 or online at CanadianVitaminShop.com. Sale ends September 30th.
Crawling through Colwood, packed on the Pat Bay, mixed up on Mackenzie, and maneuvering through the Malahat, first with traffic. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Back to Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. John and I are talking to Rod Allen, Superintendent of Learning, the Ministry of Education, about the curriculum review. Rod, before we went to commercial break, you were distinguishing between, you know, developing skill sets, particularly, you know, identifying critical thinking skill sets versus knowledge-based curriculum, which was you know, maybe too much of the bias in the past. Explain to me how, through a curriculum, you foster and develop critical thinking capability.
That's a great question, and I think what it points out is the fact that curriculum reform or changing the curriculum isn't the silver bullet.
Right.
What it does is it enables other things to happen. So the magic that we all know in education is the spark that happens between teachers and kids when they're engaged in an exciting intellectual pursuit of lots of curiosity and so on. So the question is, how do you allow for that to happen more easily? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we hear from teachers, and my experience as a long time teacher, principal, you know, superintendent of schools before I came into the ministry would agree with this, is that if teachers are and students are feeling too rushed to slow down a little bit and really dig deeper, that's the problem. So the curriculum doesn't necessarily create critical thinkers, but it, by getting the balance right and getting the number of learning outcomes right, it allows for those things to be more likely to happen in classrooms where teachers can take kids deeper into the material.
Right, because critical thinking really is an issue of the learning process, I would think, more than the actual curriculum, right?
Yes, it's really a state of mind. We call it a habit of mind, being able to think critically or in an innovative way. Those are our processes, as opposed to, you know, here's a checklist of 10 things you need to memorize to be a critical thinker.
This is great to hear. Hi, Rod. John here.
John just wanted to break in because he had a sense that I wasn't going to let him talk this morning. So.
You and I are dangerous this morning. But notwithstanding, since the financial meltdown in 2008, there's been an interesting transformation within our business community, locally, provincially, nationally. There has been a need for our business people to be more creative, to be more innovative, to be more and demonstrate entrepreneurial skill sets for us to be competitive in this global marketplace. And one of the challenges of our education system has been that we haven't been creating people that can do those things. Mm-hmm. And so it's very encouraging to hear that we are now setting a foundation in which those sorts of elements can come out. Rod, can you talk a little bit before Bob comes in and goes somewhere else around how those elements and those skill sets and business are being introduced into the curriculum and perhaps a new curriculum down the road?
Great question. And I think that sort of that entrepreneurial spirit or that sense of innovation and creative thinking, we're distinguishing between critical thinking and creative thinking and innovation. Mm-hmm. So I think that entrepreneurial piece that you're talking about, which is so important, is really around that creative thinking and innovation. We know, as I'm sure you do, looking at it from the business end of things, that people like me are really, really old, and we've come out of it.
Sorry, Rod. Yeah. It's just that, you know, you can't see us, of course. I mean, we're quite young.
Yeah, I took that from your voices, but I was going to say people like you are really old, but I thought I'd be in the air for a few more minutes.
Oh, that's great.
Sorry, go ahead, Rod.
So, you know, folks like us from our generation really kind of often came out of school, moved onto a career path, and we've sort of stayed along that career path for a long period of time. A lot of people working within the same area, maybe even the same company for long periods of time. We know that's not the case for our kids coming out of school now, but they'll likely be in 5 or 6, maybe even 7 quite discrete careers. Mm-hmm. or pieces of work over their lifetime. So their ability to reinvent themselves, to learn, to be entrepreneurial about themselves, if not just
mission critical
with themselves and their own skill set,
yeah,
is absolutely critical. I've got 2 kids in university right now, and that's really a huge focus. I think for them is, you know, they're not looking at a 35-year career path probably in some job. They're looking at a whole number of things. So the ability to analyze the current conditions, look towards the future, see what's going to be needed, figure out how they can contribute to that, learn what they need to learn to be successful in that, work in that area, and then reinvent themselves yet again is so important. And it just wasn't in our day, and it isn't really represented in our sort of current factory model system of education.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very, very encouraging to hear that. Well done.
Now, we were talking about, you know, you mentioned earlier some of the people who, or groups, let's put it that way, that were involved in this process. You know, clearly the most important group has to be the people on the front lines, the teachers. I mean, what is the nature of their involvement in this process?
Ongoing, I'd say. There were some troubles last year. You might have heard about them.
Do you recall that, John?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Challenges.
Challenges. Challenges, Rod.
Yes, some challenges. And we know that, as you said, it's crystal clear in our minds that this work can't go forward without teachers. Teachers have to be profoundly involved in it. The people that need to be writing this curriculum, essentially, are teachers. And that's the approach we've been taking. We're using the term co-construction. So how we're trying to go about this is quite different than we've ever done before.
Okay.
We're not sitting in the basement of the ministry in the dark, you know, banging out curriculum on old Olivetti typewriters and then mailing it out to folks.
Right.
We're really trying to engage the field in the actual construction of this.
Okay, so when we talk about engaging teachers in the process, you know, I'm curious as to how that's being done. For example, is it a process that's being done directly with teachers, or is it a process that's being done with teachers, say, through the BCTF?
We're both, I think, are it's fair to say. So last year we invited a number of people to join a sort of a committee, a group of folks that really knew a lot about curriculum and could help guide us through a bit of this process.
Mm-hmm.
BCTF was invited to participate in that, and they declined the offer as we were in job action, and we moved ahead mm-hmm. with all the other groups. But as we were getting to some pieces, some models, and some prototypes, we kept putting those out to the system to say, please tell us what you think. So an important point right now for us this morning is we have written no curriculum at this point.
Right.
We have some models, some prototypes. We've done a bunch of thinking. So we put those prototypes out and did a series of about 14, I think it was 14 regional meetings around the province last spring, and said, here's our thinking to date. We want to come and talk about curriculum, but we don't want to come empty-handed. Here's some slots. What do you think?
Okay, wait. I was just going to say, one thing I just want to make clear or clarify is you said that, the BCTF, for reasons we understand, declined to participate, last year during this process. But were there teachers involved last year during the process? Or did, the job action mean that, there were no teachers involved?
So when we went out to these regional sessions, they were open to anybody. And we know that hundreds and hundreds of teachers participated in the regional meeting.
That's great.
Perfect. Okay. That's just what I wanted to be clear on.
And they gave us lots of great feedback. And there was other people there besides teachers. There was lots of parents, because that's a group we often don't hear from clearly at these level of conversations around curriculum or assessment. There was a number of kids, principals, vice principals, community members, business people, and so on. So we had about 14 of those. That took us into just about the summertime. And by then, job action was over. Mm-hmm. So over the course of the summer, I don't actually know the exact number, it was probably at least 100 teachers came into the ministry over the summer in teams and worked on sort of actioning the models. Let's take some of these models and let's put let's rethink our learning outcomes and let's see if we can start to build some prototypes of what this looks like. So over the course of the summer, teachers began building prototypes in grades 2, 4, 7, and 10 for what this curriculum could look like. And that was all done by teachers over the summer working with us in the ministry.
Right. As opposed to a curriculum that might have been created pre-cell phone, pre-email, pre-Facebook, pre-technology. Explain to me, please, how this process is incorporating what is clearly an information revolution in the past 15 to 20 years. How are elements of technology being implemented within this review and now understanding that that's how kids talk?
Brilliant question. We won't be using Twitter, apparently.
And I think that's a good choice, Rod.
We need him on the show. I like this guy.
It's way too early for me.
And for us, apparently.
But we have school starting at this time of day everywhere, so that's another thing it'd be great to talk about one day, is sort of the broader range of transformational reforms that I think are going on around the province, including things like, are teenagers at their best at 8 o'clock in the morning?
Right.
Or should we be? So anyway, that's probably another conversation.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, because you hear a lot of discussion around education reform, associated with, how we do it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I'd love to come back and chat about that. Because the curriculum piece is really only one piece of a whole big set of things that are conversations going on around the province that are really transforming education. And it would be misleading to think the curriculum is the silver bullet or the one piece. It's the thing that's sort of topical right now, but there's a whole number of other things that are going on that have to go on in parallel with this, like assessment. And a whole bunch of things, but I'll get back to your question about technology because I think it's really important. What this isn't, the transformation in British Columbia that's sort of being framed out a little bit in the Ed Plan, what it isn't is technology. This isn't about shiny things and let's plug kids into computers. But what it is recognizing the transformative nature of technology.
Right.
So technology can enable great learning if it's done right. Mm-hmm. If you just take kids and plug them in front of computers, that's devastatingly bad. Mm-hmm. So where is that right balance? So for example, just in a very small way, one of the things that we're doing with the curriculum piece, see why I'm coming back to curriculum?
I noticed that segue. It wasn't that smooth, Rod, but
I liked it.
In the past, we've written our curriculum, they call them IRPs, Integrated Resource Packages, big thick binders. They're printed on paper, and you get this massive 4-inch binder and you get one per subject. And so, a teacher's literally got about 3 feet of these sitting on their desk to wade through. We're not, and then when we put them online, we put them online as digital paper. Mm-hmm. We're not doing that this time. So we are constructing in a digital format right from the get-go. So the documents are live, hyperlinked. The resources that come in underneath feel more like wikis or those kinds of things that are far more accessible. Teachers can mix and match in a much easier way with this. Using technology as an enabler, just as we would expect that to happen in schools and in classrooms, that technology is used not as an end unto itself, but as an enabler of great learning.
Well, Rod, that's great and perfect, because it leads into our next guest, who I believe you know, Dr. Valerie Irvine from UVic, and we're going to be talking about educational technologies. But that's all the time we have this morning, and we're going to take you up on your offer to come back, because education is a particular interest of ours, and we're sometimes sad at the degree to which it doesn't get talked about more often, because, what is it that we do that is more important than how we educate our children? So I thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Rod. You're listening to
Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
Level Ground Trading. Local, direct, delicious.
What does being local mean to you? My name is Stacy Taves, and I co-founded Level Ground Trading 15 years ago. We embody what it means to be local. We're a zero-waste facility, sending nothing to Heartland, utilizing 13 streams of recycling and compost. We pay our staff to cycle the work on the peninsula, and we sponsor hundreds of local nonprofit groups each year. That's what being local means to me.
We'll be there for you at the Victoria Marathon. Grab a toonie and run, walk, limp, or crawl to the Level Ground Coffee Refueling Station.
Get your property exposed to more than 10,000 visitors monthly at ronneal.com. That's ronneal.com.
Our previous agent didn't cut it. Nothing happened. The condo was empty for months. No showings and no communications. Once we got in touch with Ron, we had a full price offer within 2 weeks.
If you are serious about selling, call Ron Neal now at RE/MAX Alliance and start packing.
Call the Neal Estate Team for your real estate dream.
RonNeal.com. Shop with confidence at Save On Foods. We're priced right. Jumbo yams. Cart price, only 49 cents a pound. Or assorted varieties of stovetop stuffing mix. 120 grams. Cart price, just 99 cents each. Plus, for exclusive offers on products you want, sign up at SaveOnFoods.com. Save On Foods, BC's very own since 1915.
I'll get the Smuggler's Clubhouse sandwich with fries and an iced tea.
Okay, want a second floor reno on that clubhouse? That's where we take out the middle piece of bread.
Nice one.
When they say they're the friendliest little pub in Victoria, they mean it. Smuggler's Cove Pub in Cadbury Bay Village. Open from 11:30 to 11:30 Monday to Saturday, Sunday brunch from 11 to 2, and a great lineup of Victoria craft beers every single day. Smuggler's Cove Pub, the friendliest little pub in Victoria. Daily specials online at smugglerscovepub.com.
Good dog, good dog. Mmm, that's a very good dog.
With the taste of Island Bakery, the ordinary becomes extraordinary. Hot dogs become super dogs. Hamburgers become super burgers. Sandwiches become... well, you get the idea. That's because Island Bakery hot dog and hamburger buns are baked locally and delivered to your grocery store daily. So if you want to turn your next summer event into a super summer event, make sure you pick up the delicious home-style taste of Island Bakery.
When news breaks, Victoria turns to CFAX 1070. News, weather, traffic. When you need to know. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Welcome back to Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. I'm your host, Bob Russell, joined as always by my co-host, John Jurisic, and we're talking about education during the first hour, and on the line now we have Dr. Valerie Irvine. Valerie is an assistant professor of educational technology in the Faculty of Education at the University of Victoria. She's been involved in the field of educational applications of information and communication technologies for over a decade. Valerie, welcome to the show.
Great. Thank you so much for having me here. I was pretty excited to see you're having a Twitter handle and a hashtag. So.
Yeah, and that's really working out well for us. You may have heard that. But
actually, I just tweeted it out, and we already have a couple of things on there. So it's active. So if people want to make a comment at SUNAMPA, I'm watching the
You do that much better than John does.
Way better.
Way better.
They're escorting me out of the room.
I think you need a third co-host, maybe.
Okay, you're hired.
Awesome. I do have an English lit major, so.
Well, hey, there you go. She's a critical thinker. She'd be a great law student and lawyer as well.
Oh, man, now they're really escorting me out of the room.
Yeah, exactly.
Valerie, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Okay. Fantastic. Listen, is it possible you could just give us a sense of what you're doing at UVic and how you are an absolute sort of national leader finding ways and putting adopting technology in the classroom? What are you laughing at, Bob?
You are such a panderer sometimes. I mean, God, John. Anyway, sorry, Valerie. Go ahead.
So what we're doing at UVic, we do have a phenomenal faculty, and so many of our members from across all the disciplines, from math ed, language literacy, et cetera, are trying to turn around and be part of the change that's going on in BC. And part of that's working with teachers and trying to do pilot pieces in schools, with schools, trying to figure it out. Because if we are going to have this change coming up, we need to figure out how we're doing our pre-service teacher ed. So we're not graduating student teachers into the field and have them actually need to have a whole other round of professional development to figure out how to adapt. So we want to be sort of part of
point.
The change,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jill Code and I are in the area of ed tech, and we're two of the three co-directors in the Thai lab, and we're one of the largest ed tech research labs, I would probably say, in the country. And we also have Dr. Allison Hadwin, who is a international leader in self-regulated learning. So all of the, if people want to learn, it's at tie.uvic.ca. But our pre-service core ed tech course, I think, is something I'm proud of, and Jill has been sort of the person behind our interface there, which is quite open. So if people do want to look at it and even join in and comment, we have all of our pre-service teachers with blogs, and they're blogging publicly, and we're connecting them with K-12 students who are blogging publicly, some in Argentina, in Canada.
Perfect.
So it's kind of, we're trying to create that connection. So it's at edtech.uvic.ca/courses/EDCI336. So that's kind of one of the pieces that we're doing. The other thing is just trying to be on top of, the change going on in the schools, because understanding what's going on there, I need to be able to change my practice. And for my own personal professional development, how do I not be that prof standing in front of the classroom and talking and conveying that information? And it's believe me, it's hard. It's a challenge to really let go and let the students actually get more and more involved.
Exactly.
Well,
yeah.
Well, I guess that's something I'd like to sort of focus on a little more. We were talking, as you know, with Rod about difference between knowledge based and skill development and the whole skill development side of things, particularly if you're talking about critical thinking, it's a process.
Yeah.
It's how you're learning that is going to create those skill sets. And we got some fairly significant barriers out there right now in terms of class size and things of that sort. Also, class composition is another issue in terms of how you actually engage those students in a different process, and for the teachers it's got to be very, very hard to do. And we have all heard stories about teachers becoming babysitters in a lot of cases, because sometimes they're dealing with a situation that's difficult to handle. How can technologies be applied to get us to that process of learning differently and developing skills?
Okay, well, I can tell you I was one of those kids that was hard to handle in high school.
I'm not surprised.
90 days of the school year and went skiing, and I was disengaged. Mm-hmm. I was totally disengaged. I remember I wrote a poem, and I read it to my students, actually, about a grade 11 social studies teacher who, the poem was called I Wish, and I talked about sitting in this hard desk looking at the clock and being the girl next to me who had nail polish on so she could pick it off. And I looked to the teacher, and he seemed to be making a long, deep humming noise, right? And so and then you've got behavior issues, right? Because I need, you know, you've the skipping, you have the, I can't sit here. And especially with, you know, younger children, when they have so much energy, you need to actually funnel that and to be engaged. If you want them to learn, standing there and talking, they're not going to learn, right? Mm-hmm. So you need to be able to pass on the torch, so to speak. If you go and check out, there's twitter.com. My handle is _ValerieI, V-A-L-E-R-I-E. And if people go there and click on recent images and scroll to September 19th, there's like pictures from Calgary Science School. They went deskless. Mm-hmm. So none of this rows and, you know, and not even the pods, you know, of putting the class desks together like that, but they make couches and mats on the floor, and there's a little cart where I'm not sure if it's iPads or if it's some laptops they could pull out, but fascinating to see some of those pictures. And then I'm here standing like a, you know, an education prof going, holy crow, how do I do that? You know?
Right.
So we need to figure out and connect with those people who are on fire and trying new things and enable them to share that. And technology can help with that sharing, so that little pocket of innovation just doesn't stay there in one small place. Mm-hmm. And so that's where social media comes in handy, where we can connect, and technology can connect us that way from a protee angle, but also from a youth angle, right? These grade 4 or 5 students in Argentina are connecting with our pre-service teachers up here in Canada, right? So we can break a lot of the what we used to do and share our practices. So.
Yeah, yeah. Valerie, you and I have chatted about this following issue before, and a lot, we came across this a lot in my previous tech company when we were providing online learning resources to the classroom. How is the culture of the classroom changing and evolving to where the teacher sees the technology tools as resources rather than losing control of the of the classroom?
Well,
and that becomes the paradigm shift that you and I have, you know, had extensive coffees over. Tell us how that's changing, please. If it is. I really hope it is.
Well, I was part of a sort of a field trip last February up to Salt Spring Island, and I'm sorry for mentioning you guys up there. You're probably going to get a flood of, hey, can we come see what you're doing?
Fantastic.
But,
send them to Sanampa.
Yeah. We'd like to hear from somebody.
Yeah. Well, hey, we've got two people here. I'll say hello to Kyle Timms, just tweeted that he's listening, and Learning Murd, what's her, Mardell Sauerborn. So we've got a couple people
fantastic.
On the hashtag saying hello.
Now we really have to buy you coffee.
Yeah.
Or breakfast.
But and the personalized learning approach up there, it was really interesting because they blasted their timetable. So not the 50-minute, 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 you know, things, which, as Rod was saying earlier, you can't really go deep into anything when you're focusing on the check, 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 you know, getting through all these curriculum outcomes that they have to follow. So they blasted the timetable, and frankly, they looked at the curriculum and said, we can't do this. It's detracting. So they kind of went forth and did a bit of their own thing. And I was surprised, actually, to hear that the ministry was, you know, kind of applauding that they were trying something different as opposed to saying, you know, hey, do the checklist.
Are you involved with sort of that transformational classroom? Is that something that the TIE Lab and UVic are leaders in?
Valerie, excuse me. You know what? I'm going to get you to answer that question after we take a quick commercial break.
No problem.
Okay.
When you buy your home heating oil, you get oil. But if you sign up for Peninsula Co-op's automatic fill-up before October 31st, you get up to $550 in cash rewards. $50 right away and $100 per year for 5 years after that. Plus, co-op members got 5 cents per liter back last year. So will it be just oil or home heating oil with membership and cash rewards from locally owned Peninsula Co-op? Visit peninsulacoop.com for details.
Hi, I'm James McKenzie from Monk Office. As an island-grown company, Monk Office believes in making a difference in our community, including minimizing our impact on our environment. We believe little changes in everyday habits can make a big difference. Take a look at your office supplies. Why not use a pen made from recycled plastic or recycled paper in your printer? Check out all our earth-friendly options in any of our stores or at monk.ca. Together we make a difference.
Very helpful, most helpful.
Right here at home.
Have you been living with a water entry problem in your basement or crawl space? Have you been reluctant to deal with it because you saw the mess and heard the cost next door at your neighbor's? Well, Earth Service Drain Master has been solving water entry and drainage problems economically for 32 years. Trust our drainage team to restore, repair, or renew your existing system back into working condition. Call Earth Service Drain Master at 250-479-0195. We will be glad to arrange a visit and assess your problem.
Let the sun shine in with Excalibur Glass. Get more out of your outdoor or indoor deck with a custom all-glass railing. Constructed with aluminum post supports, these railings are durable and attractive with no top or bottom rail to obscure your view. And of course, it'll add value to your home. Get the most out of your scenery with a custom all-glass railing from Excalibur Glass. You'll clearly see the difference. Excalibur Glass and Aluminum, the homeowner's store, 2189 Keating Cross Road.
Hi, this is Terry Moore. You got a scraped bumper? Don't put it off. Come down and see the boys at Island Color. They'll make it seem like that scrape never happened. And you're selling your car or you're at the end of your lease? Bring it to Island Detail. From car washes by hand to shiny showroom detailing, Island Detail will make your car look amazing. Island Detail and Island Color at 740 Princess Street. Online at islanddetail.ca.
Congestion in your throat? Take a lozenge. Congestion on the roads? Listen to us. First with traffic. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Welcome back to Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. We're spending the first hour talking about education. We spoke in the first half hour with Rod Allen about the curriculum review. We're talking now with Valerie Irvine from University of Victoria about the application of new technologies in the classroom. John, you asked Valerie a question. I interrupted, and now Valerie.
All right.
Do we remember what the question was?
The question is, what are we doing in the TIE lab?
Well, you see, and I'm really glad Valerie remembered.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I don't want to make it about, you know, the TIE lab because there's so many different universities, and it's not all happening at universities. A lot of the leadership's actually coming from those teachers frontline in the school. So I actually kind of think in some ways we're following and then going, hey, well, that's cool, and let's partner with that and see how this works.
I think you're providing leadership as well, Valerie.
Okay,
for sure.
I think it's two, and you can't. It's a two way relationship,
yeah.
For
mm-hmm.
sure. So from that angle, I think going and visiting Salt Spring, getting sort of, you know, lit on fire from that. We went to Science World. There was an international education symposium with 25 world leaders on science ed. But what was interesting, the conversation was exactly the same. So I think part of what we can do is try to connect these dots because we have grad students in various areas doing research, and so we can bring back knowledge from the field and we can infuse, you know, our knowledge into the field. The self-regulated learning movement is huge because if we're going to kind of deconstruct that structure, that top-down structure of instruction, and focus more on learning, well, then how do those students figure out how to self-regulate that learning? So that's where my colleague Allison Hadwin is doing fantastic work, and also with her colleagues at UBC and SFU. Our piece is really trying to get those student teachers, what Jill and I are working on, in that pre-service ed tech course, too. And it's not about the tech. If you go to the course and look at it, it's not about the tech. We're not interested in teaching PowerPoint and Excel and that kind of stuff, but about that connecting. And I think this has been around a long time. I don't think this 21st century learning is anything new. In the 90s, we called it active learning, really. Mm-hmm. It's the same kind of philosophy line. My mom called it survival skills growing up, you know, being critical, thinking outside the box. And Einstein, you know, criticized our education and, you know, said it was creating servile hellas.
Isn't she great?
In his day, right? But saying, get out of this, you know, listen to the teacher talk.
To build upon that. So
yes.
So here now we have a phenomenon called social media, a component of which apparently I do not understand.
Well, we'll have to have another coffee then.
Yeah, that's right. How is that element? How is that playing into the classroom? How is what you're doing helping the platform become a resource and an enabler rather than a problem?
Yeah. First of all, if you're one of those people who's just starting to roll their eyes if you say the word Twitter, hold on, freeze. Give me a moment.
I'm frozen.
If you follow Kim Kardashian and, you know, Ellen DeGeneres or what have you, that's what you're going to get out of it. If you follow Chris Kennedy in West Vancouver, superintendent there, or if you follow Mike McKay in Surrey, or if you follow Chris Rueger, these are some of the active people. But frankly, I'm interested in the teachers who are kind of going, I'm trying something new and trying to figure it out and going through that awkward, you know, piece on, because that's where you can listen to someone higher up in a position, but where the front line's happening, that's where I think we can see some really rich dialogue. So I tell my piece service teachers, if you go to Chris Kennedy's lists, right, on his Twitter profile, see lists, he has all the Twitter handles of all the superintendents in BC who are tweeting. If you go to Chris Weger's handle and then look at his list, he's got like 500 or so BC principals and vice principals who are tweeting. So if you're a pre-service teacher and you're interested in what's going on in the field, you're really missing out if you're not following those people. It's how you use it. And then beyond that, there's all these education reform advocates. So
Valerie, are you finding that let's call it a certain demographic of which Bob and I might be a part of, are adopting, or are they simply saying that's for the younger teachers to look after?
No, they're adopting. I'm working with a couple of retired principals who are sessionals up at UVic, and they actually were. It's not an age thing; it's an openness thing, a willingness to. Keep learning. It's a lifelong learning part of it. And we were piloting a multi-access course this past month and totally trying to change, you know, how we're doing some of the teaching learning up at UVic and letting the learners choose how they want to enroll in a single class. And so we have a mix of online students live and the face-to-face students in the classroom. And so these are retired principals giving it a go. And they're keen on learning all of this stuff. So I don't think it's anything to and here we have on your hashtag here, someone saying Twitter is the best pro D I've ever experienced.
Wow.
So, and I've heard that again and again and again because it's timely. And if you go to a hashtag and tweet, which is like tweeting to a keyword, and thousands of people may be following that keyword, you ask a question, you get an answer, it takes your school, and rather than have it limited to the people, especially if you're an art educator and you're the only one in that school, how are you going to get yourself infused? You wait for the one Pro D day, or you can connect by social media.
Well, you're a brilliant example of how these tools can be used as a resource.
But we need to also change our government. I'm going to take this moment to do a little bit of a soapbox thing. We have the most restrictive BC privacy laws in North America in BC, and it's basically saying thou shalt not do cloud computing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Google June cloud computing BC guidelines, and you're going to be shocked. So we need to figure out a way, and with an election coming up, I'm really hoping that people talk to their local representatives and say, "Holy mackerel, we've got to change this." So we can still use the cloud computing social media places, but we have to do it in a certain way, and we have to make sure that we're informed on it, and as we go and use it, we're just using it with consent, and that kind of thing is going forward. So. That's one thing that's a bit of a pain in the ass.
I'm actually opposed to privacy.
Okay.
And I only say that half facetiously.
Yeah.
You know, people are actually exchanging less information. People who need to exchange information are exchanging less information because we like to treat them like they're all a bunch of dummies and can't take responsibility for things they don't want to share.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's important that some of this stuff makes sense. You know, if you're going to have a blog, try and host it in Canada, that kind of thing. But it's honestly a bit ridiculous because someone watches or loads your page in the U.S. I mean, the boundaries are. I don't know. Once you start dissecting that guideline, it starts becoming more and more ridiculous because what we're doing is ubiquitous anywhere, and the law is a bit, you know, 20 years old.
Valerie,
we've only got about a minute and a half left here. Valerie, John claims to have a short answer. Short question.
I have a very short ask.
Okay.
Can you just tweet the Google search words you indicated about a minute or two ago, and I'll capture that from the Synapa feed.
Sorry, you wanted which task?
The privacy bit you asked me to go. Yeah,
the URL.
Could,
I'll tweet the link to that. Certainly.
Thank you.
People don't not do it because of that, because there's certainly ways to get around it. I think it would be a lot easier for education innovation if we actually got our government to change it.
Okay.
Just an amendment, slight stuff to make it better and easier for all of us.
But then you would have all those privacy advocates out there saying, oh, no, you can't do that.
Yeah, I disagree. And we should actually have another thing just on that as a topic for a
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And trust me, we could do that. Just one last quick question, and it's actually a big question, so it's sort of unfair to ask, but we just got about...
But you can do it anyway, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to do it anyways. Because we got about 45 seconds here.
Right.
And if I say goodbye, my producer's going to look at me and say, what are you doing, idiot?
He does that all the time.
We've been talking about, you know, the use of the new technologies to share information on different ways of doing things, okay? Here comes the big question. Okay, that's great. That's wonderful. That's fantastic. How could it actually be used as part of the teaching process, learning process in the classroom?
Technology for sharing?
Yeah.
Well, just even from an angle of editable docs from the Google Docs piece, you open up a document and you can edit with everyone in your class at the same time. You can edit it with someone in, you know, a same time zone, obviously, at the same time from another school. So there's lots of abilities for collaboration. Collaboration gets amplified hugely with the use of technology and that sharing piece, that connecting piece.
Well, that's maybe another show to discuss that.
We've got lots of stuff here.
Anyways, Valerie, we do have to break for the news.
All right. Well, I
thank you very much for putting up with us for 30 minutes, particularly putting up with John. I mean, I have to
I was trying to behave.
Yeah, well, I have to sit here for 2 hours with him. So in any event, thank you again. That was Dr. Valerie Irvine, Assistant Professor of Educational Technology in the Faculty of Education at the University of Victoria. We're just going to break for the news, and when we come back, we'll be talking politics. Politics.